episode of A Week Late is brought to you by FenEntertainment.com, offering the very best in free independent music from the great sunny state of Florida and beyond. Download underground hip-hop, rock, industrial, drum and bass, dubstep, ska, drumstep, jungle, and much, much more. From single tracks to full sets, albums, and remixes, all for free. Plus the latest videos that get you up to speed on all the current tech, art, music, video games, TV, movies, pop culture, and even anime. No ads, no pop-ups, no flashy distraction banners, and it's absolutely free. Never charge for anything. For all this and more information, go to www.fenentertainment.com.
What's up, everybody? My name is Darren, a.k.a. Analysis489, and welcome to another episode of the world-renowned Week Late podcast. I did the intro kind of backwards there a little bit, but moving forward. Change of plans. Today's episode was supposed to be Total Recall, the remake. And that didn't really pan out too well. There was a lot of movies that hit the theater at the same time, so even though Total Recall's only been out for 3 or 4 weeks maybe, they're already starting to phase it out, and they had a later showing that I couldn't go to. So instead, I forgot to check what number episode this is. This is episode 37. This is going to be Comic-Con episode 4, A Fan's Hope. This movie was shot in 2010. You can catch it for free on Hulu. I don't know if they're showing it for free if you have to have a subscription, but if you don't have one, again, we're not sponsored or anything, but if you don't have an account, you can go and try out Hulu for, I think, a week for free when you sign up for an account without a credit card. I think that's how it works now. I've had mine since Hulu was in beta, so I don't know if there are really any advantages to that as a customer. But anyway, this is a documentary about Comic-Con, obviously. It's in the title. I believe done by Morgan Spurlock, who I'm a big fan of. He did movies like, now I'm going to forget all of them. Super Size Me, where he ate McDonald's for 30 days and it almost killed him. And out of that, he got a deal with, I think it was HBO, to do a series called 30 Days, based on the Super Size Me movie, where at first I think he was doing different things for 30 days, but then other people in season 2 started doing other things for 30 days. Like, one of the episodes that stood out in my mind was, I think, a racist living with a black family, stuff like that. So, really interesting stuff. I think this is that movie. Shot in 2010, released in 2011. It was shot at the San Diego Comic-Con 2010. It follows, well, I'm just going to read the description. Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, explores this amazing cultural phenomenon by following the lives of 5 attendees as they descend upon the ultimate geek mecca at San Diego Comic-Con 2010. Released in 2011, and then I think debuted again at this most recent San Diego Comic-Con 2012. I'm interested to see the similarities between this and the other movie that I reviewed also on Hulu called Jedi Junkies. That one was not done by Morgan Spurlock, but still really good. It had a sort of a sense of community to it, but also some weirdos out there, just straight up, you need help. But it's done by Morgan Spurlock, like I said, once again. He also did another show on Hulu called A Day in the Life. Mark Maron was the first episode, and I believe the last episode that he did was with Questlove from The Roots. If you guys don't know who they are, then after this podcast, you need to go listen to some Roots, get some culture in you. So hopefully I'll be able to watch some of the other movies in the theater. The reason it's been so long, we've had a huge gap in regular numbered episodes because we've had bonus episodes and we had a music edition with a local band in the area that was nice enough to let me do an interview before their show here in the area, and it came out really well, so hopefully we'll be looking to post some post-concert interviews with some of the bands that came, so look out for that. I think there were like 3 or 4 episodes that were bonus and music editions in between the last time I even went to the movies, so I'm kind of behind. But I've been wanting to watch this documentary for a while, and I just saw it being advertised on Hulu. So the weather is kind of crappy, I figured I'd stay indoors and make an episode out of this one, no pun intended. I'm kind of curious. I mean, I get the pun, Comic-Con episode 4, but I think it's unnecessary. I get that it's a Star Wars thing, but Comic-Con is not a Star Wars convention, so, I don't know. I get the reference, but I think it's unnecessary, but we'll see. I could be wrong. I think this was a collaboration with Stan Lee as well from Marvel, but I don't know if I'm mixing up documentaries now, but we'll see. Not too much in the comments. It's got a 5-star rating on Hulu, so we'll see what I give it on our 0 to 5 scale for movies that we review online. This is kind of a strange episode. It falls in strange territory because it's a new movie, but it's also on Hulu, and usually Hulu reviews or Netflix reviews are bonus episodes, but this is still a fairly new movie. IMDb says this movie was released in 2011. I don't know how true that is. Probably the tail end of 2011. So this is a fairly new movie. If it were released, it would still be in theaters, but I am going to make this a numbered episode because it's still a fairly new movie. I believe it runs 1 hour and 26 minutes and some change, and it's actually rated PG-13. Interesting. So I'm going to stop talking now and watch Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, for Episode 37 of A Week Late Podcast. Also, I don't know if it's even worth to talk about expectations on a documentary. But if I did have to, say anything about expectations, I hope this is a feel-good movie. I'm interested to see how the 5 stories tie in to each other and how similar, how different these people are, what their professions are. But it just says it follows the lives of 5 attendees, so, could be random people. I'm also interested to see, which celebrities turn up or if I can spot any in the background. But besides that, go watch it. And especially if you like documentaries, I'm a huge documentary lover. I don't watch as many as I'd like, but I have a ton on my list, So I think you can actually friend us because they have a social thing now on Hulu. It would be hulu.com/users/fenpromos or Fen Entertainment. I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe you can't do that. I'll check. And then in part two in the review, I will let you guys know in the contact info all of our social platforms and stuff like that when I go through the Gmail and whatnot. if I remember, I will try to pull up the Hulu account and see if you're able to friend somebody a la Facebook or any of the other social networks and whatnot. All right. If you heard a brief switchover and my voice sounds a little different, it's because I just had a sneezing fit. And since I'm not using a microphone, I don't have a cough button, so I had to shut it off before I sneezed in all your ear holes. It was like 5 or 6 sneezes in a row. I think about to have another one. All right. That's it. I'll see you in part two. Listen to some intermission music. And we'll see you for part two of Week Late Podcast, episode 37. Everybody to part two, episode 37 of a Week Late Podcast. My name is Darren, aka Analysis 489. I told myself I was going to stop introducing myself on the second part. I think it's more of a marker for me when I convert these over to MP3. It's easier for me to distinguish what's what. Anywho, for this movie, documentary, the actual title escapes me because it's kind of long. It's like, let me see if I can remember off the top of my head without looking, because I actually took notes this time. Well worthy notes, I should say. Comic-Con, episode 4, A Fan's Hope. I indeed did have to stop again, not just to look it up, but my Xbox was making strange noises, so I had to check it out. If I could get back on track, I was correct in the assumption in the first portion when I said that this was somehow involving Stan Lee. Not only did he help produce this movie, along with Morgan Spurlock and Joss Whedon of Avengers fame, of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fame, Firefly fame, I mean, wow. This movie, I had high expectations going in, but this movie blew me away. Where do I start? There was, at the beginning, before I get into spoilers, this is part of my rating, which at this point I'm pretty sure you guys know what it is. I've never seen in a title sequence so many, I don't know what you want to call them, spots for production companies. There were like 6 or 7 different ones, one of which was PAL Entertainment, which is Stan Lee's animation studio, production company, if you will. Amazing. Stan Lee was in this movie. He showed up plenty of times and shared his opinion, as did Joss Whedon. I will say that this movie did make me feel good. It was a feel-good movie. It also had a lot of comedic elements in it, a ton of cameos, but the storyline and the way it was shot, and there were beautiful illustrated comic panels fitting the theme of the movie. It was edited brilliantly. It was great. The score was awesome and on point. The characters, which were real people, I love documentaries that can ground you. We sort of get lost in our own little spaces sometimes, in our bubbles, but it's so refreshing to see a movie like this. Once again, Morgan Spurlock as a director for documentaries just knocks it out of the park. He keeps outdoing himself. I don't know how, but he's amazing and great. So I guess, you know, the rating, everything was there. I didn't find anything wrong with this movie. He portrayed everything as real as it probably played out. But if not, that's also a credit to the director for editing, ultimately having final say in what gets in and what stays in and what gets cut out. So 0 out of 5 for first time listeners is the scale when I review movies on Netflix or Hulu, any sort of web-based crossover application. But like I said before, full-on episode number for this one. I'm glad I did it, too, because this movie deserves it. From 0 to 5, this movie gets a 5. I loved everything about it. It runs less than an hour and 27 minutes from beginning to end. It seems longer than that because there's so much storyline and dialogue and so many experiences that you're going through that it seems longer, but I think it's perfect. The length of the movie is great. The dialogue, the characters. So, per the usual for these episodes, we have a spoiler countdown, and it usually banters back and forth between whoever the co-host is, but clearly a lot of Netflix episodes, just like one that our good friend DJ Aaron Bond recorded one for us. You can find that on the, I think it's episode 6 or 7, where we did the Netflix review for that one alien movie with the apartment complex. I can't remember exactly. Anywho. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There you go. That's the spoiler countdown. Which there are many spoilers for this, but I will. I love documentaries so much that I never thought that I could talk about one that actually had spoilers, but this one actually does, and I'm not going to spoil it completely. So I guess for the first time ever, if you want to keep listening, I won't spoil the main spoiler, which I believe to be personally this movie. It made me laugh. It made me well up. I shed a tear or two, and I'm man enough to admit that. But beautiful moments in this film, human moments, especially when geeks and nerds are involved. There's this sort of extra clarity. You want to talk about oversharing in their day-to-day lives? They just. The dialogue is amazing from these people, and you can just tell it's not scripted. Like, you can't make this stuff up. They split it up into, you know, the lovers, the collector, the designer, all these different sort of characters that we could follow, and they made them exactly that. You had everything from cosplay to an older man that's been in the comic book industry for so long that he just wants to sort of do well enough to go out with a bang. That's one of the spoilers, you know, that I'm not going to screw up by telling you what exactly, but his journey is amazing. This older veteran of the comic book industry, and he has a safe with this Red Raven comic book in it, and I as a fan of Marvel, I've heard of Red Raven, but I never looked into it too much. Apparently it's a super rare comic, and there are like 7 characters that don't get featured in any other comic book, so the value of this comic book skyrockets, because for collectors that say they have a comic book with every single Marvel character in it, they must own the Red Raven. And it's so rare that it was valued at like $500,000 in this movie, or on the market, not even, you know, in this movie, but as an actual item. It's incredible, these journeys. But without spoiling too much, actually I didn't spoil anything, so I don't know why I even said that. There were a lot of comedic elements that just came about naturally in this, just because of that sort of nerd culture where everybody is educated in one way, shape, or form on something, and they focus in on that one thing, and they make it their thing. That's like the thing they know, and that's it. Whether it be some of the cartoonists in this movie that were trying to get noticed at Comic-Con, which I didn't know that in some... Everybody says that Comic-Con is dead. I really want to go to Comic-Con. I've always wanted to. This movie makes me want to go even more. I won't go into why I don't have my comics anymore. That was a huge... Made me kind of sad while I was watching the movie to remember that I had spent all this time collecting these comic books that were an investment. But nobody really understood that, and so when they got displaced, it was a huge impact, because nowadays some of the stuff that I spent $1.50 for is worth like $10,000. sad to say that we parted ways, unfortunately. So on a personal level, this movie hit because there are comics involved. But a lot of people say that Comic-Con is dead because it's not about the comics anymore. But I didn't know that people go there wanting to start careers. They have these opportunities where artists can go and meet with people that make the decisions on the new artist coming into a certain comic book studio or animation studio. And I had no idea that that part of the industry was at Comic-Con as well. I thought it just was so sold out that, you know, George Lucas owns the docks there now, because before it was open to everybody, but now his exhibit is so big that he actually pays San Diego or whoever owns the convention center there for exclusive rights to the loading dock. So it's gotten so commercial on one level, and that's the only thing that I thought it was. But even, and I don't know if they do it currently, but, you know, this is only 2010 Comic-Con, and they had, you know, people from, you know, sort of obscure or independent or up-and-coming comic book companies or publishers. So it's nice to see that in some fashion, Comic-Con still supports the core of what comic books are, being, you know, the artists themselves, the people that do the coloring, the inking, the drawing. Anybody that listens to the show that appreciates any kind of anything from pop culture now, I mean, it's ridiculous how popular everything has become. But again, this movie reflects that. And I couldn't write down everybody, nor did I want to, but a taste of the people that show up in this movie, besides, you know, Stan Lee and Joss Whedon, we see Kevin Smith, Eli Roth, Corey Feldman, of all people, Thomas Jane, my one and only Punisher, shot in the Tampa Bay area, by the way. Todd McFarlane, the quintessential Spider-Man artist. Frank Miller was in this movie. Seth Green, Seth Rogen, Olivia Wilde. Speaking of which, she was in the portion that was mentioning Cowboys and Aliens that they were promoting at the time. And in the crowd, there is a shot that lasts for maybe 2 seconds where I see Jeff Cannata and Mikey from the Totally Rad Show in the crowd. And I was like, oh, my God, I recognize those guys. And it was a two-second shot, and it gets sort of cut right when Jeff Cannata, like, sort of accidentally looks up at the camera that's filming the documentary. And I was just like, holy crap. I don't know them personally, but I think it's funny how I can remember watching their review of 2010 Comic-Con. I think they went to that one and reviewed it. So I thought that was funny. They were at the Expendables panel. Guillermo del Toro's in this movie. They sort of interview all these famous and non-famous regular Joes about, you know, Comic-Con. There's sort of this Apple-esque white background. Incidentally, Kevin Smith wasn't wearing shoes. He was barefoot during his interview, which was weird. Paul Scheer, Morgan Webb, I mean, amazing. Gerard Way from My Chemical Romance, because he has a comic book out called, I think it's the Umbrella Brigade, the Umbrella Factory, something like that. Go Google that if you guys like Gerard Way or My Chemical Romance at all. Joss Whedon sort of mentioned something that I wrote down here on the notes that sort of stuck with me about the commercialization of Comic-Con that I sort of commented on before. He said, let's mine, well, in reference to how much people love or are passionate about something, the movie starts out with, I believe, black and white footage from 1970, with sort of sound like a radio show interview of the first time that the comic book convention happened in San Diego. They were expecting 500 people and only got like 175, and now it's this huge thing where they've even had to scale it back because it got too big, so now they're only letting people in by invite only, I believe it's called. But I think 2010 was one of the first times that it wasn't regulated to just media or press, and I think they reported 125,000 people, which Joss Whedon comments on and says, these corporations find out, and I'm paraphrasing here, these corporations find out that there's a whole culture of people that love something and are passionate about it. And his quote is, they say, let's mine this love and get the money out. Which, coming from him, is kind of ironic because I can't stand to think about how much money he made over the Avengers or how much money he's going to make from 2 and 3. But at some point, you know, success is what it is, and it comes with a side of fat pockets. So for anybody that hasn't maybe felt good in a while, go watch this movie. I really liked the way it was shot, it was edited, and the way it was put together, the stories, the people. I guess that's it. There's this where I teared up, and I don't want to spoil it because that's the spoiler that I was talking about, follows the couple in this story where they go to Comic-Con together. They met at Comic-Con 2009, I believe, and had been dating ever since. Just incredible story. It was at the Kevin Smith panel, and I remember hearing about that story. So if anybody is like super into comic books and just that whole sort of culture, and go check this movie out. I give it a 5 out of 5, and that's pretty much it. I did not, however, go into the Hulu account to figure out what or how you could friend us, but you can find everything and more at aweeklate.com. If there's something there that you don't see, you can hit us up at fans.aweeklate@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter. It's at A Week Late. Also on Facebook.com/AWeekLatePodcast. Also the music blog side of things, FenEntertainment.com. At FENPromos is the Twitter handle. Which, by the way, we've been mentioned a few times on the Todd Glass show for the whole shushing incident. I think I'm going to put together a small snippet of that whole bit, and I'm actually going to write him a super official email letting him know that there are no hard feelings, and I didn't really know that I was going to affect the way he did a show, which seems that it's like actually a thing. It's like a 3-week long, I've noticed it anyway, maybe nobody else has, but it's gotten to the point where somebody is emailing Todd Glass about what happened, so, besides me. So I think that's pretty special. To me it is anyway. I don't know what that means to anybody else, but whatever. So, thank you for listening. Tell your friends, tell your family members. We are on iTunes as well. Just do the search for A Week Late, and it should pop up. It was brought to my attention that some iPhones are having issues with the formatting, but that has nothing to do with us. We just post a sort of module that's connected to the MP3, and iTunes does the rest. So if you can't pull it up on your iPhone, just find it in your iTunes when you're actually logged in, and all the episodes will pop up versus the 27 that show up online. So check that out. Thanks for listening. And go check out Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, streaming on Hulu Plus. I'm sure you can find it maybe on YouTube as well. That's it. Thanks for listening. And also, my personal Twitter, you can hit me up, is @analysis489. If you can't spell it, you probably shouldn't be tweeting me. All right? Thanks for listening. Do all that stuff I said earlier. All right. Late. This episode of Week Late is brought to you by FenEntertainment.com, offering the very best in free independent music from the great sunny state of Florida and beyond. Download underground hip-hop, rock, industrial, drum and bass, dubstep, ska, drumstep, jungle, and much, much more. From single tracks to full sets, albums, and remixes, all for free. Plus the latest videos that get you up to speed on all the current tech, art, music, video games, TV, movies, pop culture, and even anime. No ads, no pop-ups, no flashy distraction banners, and it's absolutely free. Never a charge for anything. For all of this and more information, go to www.fenentertainment.com.